Nick Weiss, how are you?
I am well, Alex Gertzberg.
Good. Are you having a good day?
I'm having an excellent day. So good. It's a good day for everything. So I'm glad we picked today for the podcast.
Good, man. Yeah. It's a good day to talk about dispensaries. So it's magic. It's a coincidence because that's exactly what we're talking about.
That's amazing how that works
goodness.
Out.
Fascinating. So let's say that I am a budding entrepreneur and I want to be a dispensary owner.
Mm-hmm.
What do I have to do?
So there's really only one way for you to do it right now, and that is to buy an existing dispensary. Okay. The application period for the next round of dispensary licenses has not even been announced. We have no idea when that's going to be. So right now, if you want to be a dispensary owner, your only option is to buy an existing dispensary.
And if I do that, am I still going to be subject to the same rules as if I was starting from scratch?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's built into the statute and into the regulations. Any change in ownership has to be approved by the Board of Pharmacy. But you have to go through the entire process as if you were starting from scratch.
So let's talk about those rules and regulations. What do I need to know? What do I need to follow?
Sure. So you need to know, firstly, that you're going to be under a microscope. You and all of your business partners, all of your executives, anyone with a 5% ownership or greater in your dispensary is going to go under an extremely intensive audit of your financial background, of any kind of legal background that you had, any kind of lawsuit, any kind of criminal record. And there's a whole list of disqualifying offenses that if any of your shareholders, any of your business partners have ever been convicted of, your application is going to be summarily denied.
So give us an idea of what some of the rules and regulations we'll need to follow in order to become a dispensary owner. And I assume that this list is going to be abbreviated because this is supposed to be a short podcast.
Yes.
So maybe also tell us where we can find those rules and regulations.
Sure. So the Bible for rules and regulations is in the Ohio Administrative Code. So if you start with the Ohio Revised Code, you're going to get a good general outline. But basically, you're going to be going to the Administrative Code, Section 3796, and everything to do with that, and especially on everything under a dispensary. And if you are looking through that list, you can get a really excellent idea of the true breadth and depth of the regulations that you're going to have to be following. And some of these are surprising. I think anyone who's been involved in dispensaries in other states especially is going to be surprised at the restrictions on advertising for dispensaries, which are extremely restrictive. Signage restrictions, brochure restrictions, print advertising restrictions. Essentially, the only safe way to advertise your dispensary is online. Everything else, you have extraordinary restrictions on your ability to market your dispensary, which has really hurt here in Ohio any kind of competition between the dispensaries.
What about on the employment side? What rules and regulations would a dispensary owner need to be aware of in terms of hiring, firing?
Sure. This is going to be broken down largely into whether you have a type 1 or a type 2 employee. And these are also set out under the administrative code as to what you're talking about. So if you have a key employee,
type 1 employee?
Yeah, so if you have a key employee in a dispensary, and that's someone who is management, that's someone who has access to the product that you're actually selling, that person is going to have to, one, go under another pretty extensive background check. You're not going to be able to just hire them. You're going to have that employee approved by the Board of Pharmacy before they can even start work for you. So there are additional hurdles that you're going to have to go through in order to get your workforce staffed adequately. And some dispensaries have tried to get around this by having staffing agencies go through this process with them. That's a method that you can do to ensure that these key employees, these associated key employees, meet these criteria before you even start the application process. So that's the big distinction, is that you aren't just going to be able to hire whoever you want.
So so I'm assuming that a type 2 employee is a non-management level employee, and so presumably there are fewer restrictions on that.
That's right. If they're not a key employee, then that's someone who doesn't have access to the safe. That's someone who doesn't have access to the plant material in the back. They're not going to be under the microscope, and you're going to have a little more freedom there in terms of who you can hire.
I presume that if I'm a dispensary owner, I'm not out there alone. There are resources. There are groups that I can join or at least be aware of. What are some of those resources and groups?
Sure. So the one that I've been in contact recently, we've got the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, which is located in Columbus. They're an excellent resource for anyone who is getting involved in any facet of the medical marijuana program, whether you're a dispensary owner, whether you're a processor, whether you're a cultivator, or really in any ancillary business. But they're a really great resource for anyone who's trying to get involved in the dispensary game. And they will be able to put you in touch with a lot of the specialized groups that you're going to have to be doing business with in order to operate. Dispensaries, like everyone else in the cannabis chain, have restrictions on them for things like insurance, things like taxes, things like financial services. And so the other members of the cannabis chamber, and I use them as an example, are going to be groups that have specialized knowledge. They're going to be able to work with the dispensary and know already the kind of restrictions that they're going to be under.
Other groups. You're a teacher at one of these groups.
Yeah. Right? So dispensary owners, especially the Cleveland School of Cannabis, where I teach the law and policy class. I'm also designing their updated class for them. If you are looking for employees who already have an understanding of the business, have already gone through the dispensary training, Cleveland School of Cannabis is a great option there. And they are already making connections with the existing dispensaries that have their certificates of operation or soon will. So if you're looking for employees, that is a great resource to just grab the graduates from their programs.
Got it. So if I'm already a dispensary owner, what are some best practices? What should I be doing to protect myself as an owner?
Absolutely. So some of the best practices are these are the things that you are going to have to do generally as any kind of business owner. So that is going through your liabilities, making sure that your insurance is appropriate for what you're doing, making sure that you have an employee handbook, making sure that you have employee training, making sure your contracts with your vendors are appropriate for what you have to do, making sure that you have an IT program, making sure that you have security for your business. You know, in conversations with some of the members of the insurance field that are providing services to the cannabis group, where people are falling down is not necessarily in failing to abide by the specialized regulations for cannabis companies. It's in the more basic stuff. Are you correctly defining your employees as contractors or employees?
We might even suggest that those folks go to covermy6.com and learn a little bit about those issues, those checklist items that you just went through, and what, I mean, frankly, we do for our clients in all of those areas. Cover My Six is industry agnostic. And to your point, the it's a business. A dispensary is in many ways, if not most ways, just like any other business that has the same employment issues, the same corporate issues, the same insurance issues, technology issues. They just happen to have another layer of oversight and regulation that they need to comply with, which Cover My Six would also cover. So I would encourage listeners to check that out if they are thinking about owning a dispensary or any other business.
Yeah, I think that's a great recommendation. You know, you're right that there are specialized services that need to be put in place here, particularly when we talk about tax structure, particularly when we talk about insurance and the enforceability of your insurance agreements. But at the end of the day, this is a really intense retail establishment.
Right. What can I do if I'm a dispensary owner looking for funding or trying to solve any funding-related gaps or issues?
Sure. So this is where things get hairy. You know, currently, and we talked about this in one of the other episodes, there's only one financial institution in Ohio that's advertising providing financial services to anyone in the medical marijuana scheme in Ohio.
Which one is that?
That's a Wright Pat Credit Union. And even then, those are basic financial services. So we're talking about business checking account. We're talking about payroll. We're talking about getting your ordinary necessary business expenses paid. We're not talking about small business loans. We're not talking about other alternative financing. So largely, you're going to have to go to private investors. You're going to have to go to individuals and investment groups who are going to be, who may be willing to put up funds for your dispensary. There are a few larger organizations that may provide funding. Acreage Holdings is one of those.
And that's Acreage Holdings?
Yes. And the listeners may be most familiar. This is the marijuana group that John Boehner is on the board of.
Mm. Got it. So we talked about these regulations, thinking just as a lawyer. I always want to advise, and I know you do too, our clients on the consequences of violating those regulations. So what
sure.
are we talking about here for dispensaries?
Yeah, so let's talk about this. So there are pretty extraordinary sanctions that can be leveraged on a dispensary that is not in compliance with these regulations. I mean, the most severe is that your license gets revoked, which can happen if you've got, you know, the Board of Pharmacy has extraordinary discretion to rescind a license once it has been issued. And the biggest problem there is once that has happened, every violation for selling medical marijuana outside of this scheme is a $50,000 fine. That's every single one. And that is very poorly defined as to what a specific violation is. Is that every single ounce of marijuana? Is that every bulk sale that is made? Is that every sale that's made? Is every single one of those transfers subject to a $50,000 fine? And we ran into this recently, but before Ohio went ahead and legalized hemp and CBD, there's a whole bunch of business owners who were selling hemp or CBD products found themselves at risk of these very substantial fines that the Board of Pharmacy could have leveraged against them.
Let me ask a much more basic question. What can a dispensary actually sell?
Sure. So a dispensary can sell product that can be vaped. So this is the loose plant material. They can sell edibles. They can sell oils. They can sell tinctures. They can sell a list of cannabis product that includes basically everything you can think of unless you intend to smoke it. That's the only method of cannabis ingestion that is still prohibited under the medical marijuana statute.
Got it. Okay. Nick, this has been super helpful. I appreciate it. For those folks who have not heard our prior episodes, go to GertzbergLaw.com. And so listen to those and stay tuned. In the very near future, we have at least one or two more coming. We appreciate you listening. Thanks.
These 10-minute legal talks are brought to you by the Gertzberg Law Firm, changing the character of the attorney-client relationship in business from a cost center to a trusted advisor. Drawing from their complex litigation and transactional experiences as members of large law firms, in-house counsel, and as business owners themselves, the Gertzberg Law Firm's award-winning attorneys provide clients the benefit of business lawyers with real-life business experience in a wide variety of industries. These talks are not intended to create an attorney-client relationship or to provide legal advice. If you have questions about your particular legal situation, you should contact a legal professional. To reach one of our business law or estate planning attorneys, visit www.gertzberglaw.com or call us at 440-571-7777.